you're listening to Key to Happiness Show 2 with me, Rob Saunders. Today's show, we have Carrie Brown, all the way from the US of A. Okay, just a few admins. Now, I have been doing a ketogenic, low-carb, high-fat diet since March 2018. And I've obviously had some weight loss, but also other health benefits, like a clear mind, great energy, and just feeling all-round happy. Now, it may not work for you. The show is entirely educational. Hopefully, I'm going to get some experts on the show, like Carrie, who's coming up. But just to give you a rundown, what the keto way of eating is. The keto is a ketogenic diet, and it comes from the fact that the body produces little fuel molecules called ketones. So instead of burning the usual sugar in your body, you burn fat. When you eat few carbs, which obviously carbohydrate will produce glucose in the body, the few carbs are broken down into blood sugar, and only moderate amount of protein that I eat can be converted to blood sugar as well. The liver produces ketones, and they fuel your body. Now, it may not be for you, but it does work for me. Please, please, if you are going on a change of lifestyle, please see your doctor. Has lots of benefits, but it does have its controversial stigmas about it. Now, I use a method called intuitive ketosis. Especially, I don't really measure anything. I let my body do the talking, really. But if you do want to take it seriously, folks, and if you're into measurements, things like that, lots of podcasts and websites out there. I love things like the Two Keto Dudes, which now Carrie does appear on. And also, I listen to Living La Vida Low Carb with Jimmy Moore. And I read his books as well. And there's lots of others out there. And there's a great Facebook community in the UK as well as all over the world. Now, my aim is to educate and hopefully use my experience to say this is an easy way of eating and hopefully for life. You know, I've seen the benefits. But in a short few moments, we'll be talking over in the US of A to Carrie Brown. And today, we'll be emphasizing the benefits on mental health. And Carrie will do her own introduction very shortly. And we're joined today with Carrie Brown, formerly of the UK. She's British, but she moved to the US 17, 18 years ago. Hello, Carrie.
Hello there. How are you, mate?
I'm grand. I'm absolutely fantastic.
And I am still British. I'm still a passport-carrying Brit.
Excellent. What we should do, the guy, Jack Black, who I had on the first show, he's a Scotsman. We could have had all three of us, and it could have been a great line for a joke.
There you go.
Now, let me just introduce you to Carrie. Carrie is an ex-professional pastry chef, turned cookbook author, recipe developer, freelance photographer with a crazy four-country, three-continent spanning resume, or CV if you're in the UK, which includes such things as a chocolate TV show, a chocolate cookbook, and making pastries for the Queen. Wow, our own very Queen. She trained at the National Bakery School in London. And she's now turned her pastry chef talents into creating scrumptious keto, stroke low-carb, high-fat food to help the world eat smarter, live better, and put the healthy back into healthy. She's a food and lifestyle blogger, an author of cookbooks, a podcast co-host, recipe developer, photographer, and she works alongside one of my favourite podcasts, if not the best, the Two Keto Dudes. And now she is a dudette with Carl Franklin and Richard Morris and other amazing people like Danny and Maura Vega, Kim Howerton and Dr. Ken Berry. And just basically to spread the word about the amazing benefits and help people live a ketogenic lifestyle. Now, Carrie has published 5 cookbooks that will make eating healthy and losing weight the most delicious and simple thing you'll ever do. Her website is carriebrown.com. And on that blog stroke website, Carrie shares tales of food, obviously, her travels, adventure from a splendid single life in the Sane Lane, and her trials and triumphs with bipolar disorder, adrenal fatigue, a massive E. coli infection, and a myriad of food sensitivities, and her journey back to slim and vibrant. Now, enough of me talking, Carrie. Welcome.
Hello. This is quite fun. It's great talking British again.
I know. I said I'd say croeso I Carrie Brown. That means welcome, Carrie Brown, in Welsh. So
yay!
And we've got our Five Nations rugby tournament coming up at the end of the month, end of January. So don't know if you follow English rugby or Welsh rugby at all, Carrie. So we're flying the flag for Wales. So we'll be against you English types.
I am not a sporty person, I have to admit. But at least I know what rugby is. I'm still a bit confused about the sports in America. And yeah. They have, of course, they have all the team names. And I don't even know what sport half of these team names. But I do know we're coming up to the Super Bowl, which I think is this week. Maybe the weekend after next. I don't know. Anyway, it's sports crazy here and I know nothing about any of it.
Yeah, it's sports crazy, sponsored by the high sugar companies. Now, the podcast is called Keto Happiness. Yes, we do talk about the ketogenic lifestyle and things like that. But there is a happiness part. And I thought today, Carrie, you could take us through your, mentioned on your website, trials and tribulations of overcoming bipolar disorder. Because still in the UK, it's quite not a stigma, but we're coming to terms with that. Mental health is important, and it's like a physical disease, but it's just in your head. Is that correct?
It's fascinating that your podcast is called Keto Happiness. One, because keto has literally bought me happiness, and you obviously, Rob, you know a little bit about my story, but. One of the things that I am most passionate about keto is the benefits that it brings to mental health. The health benefits that it brings to our brains is absolutely incredible. And so keto for me has literally been the thing that brought me joy. And So I was born depressed. Okay. I kind of came out that way, but I never really understood it. Even from a very young age, I knew that I was somehow different, but because I'd always felt that way or seen the world that way or had experienced life that way, it was just my normal. And I knew that people around me, like, thought I was a pain in the rear, And I was always getting in trouble, or I was always being accused of being miserable or difficult or whatever, but I didn't understand why. So I knew that I was different. I always felt there was this like black cloud over my head all the time. But, you know, when you're a kid, if you've always felt that way, that's just normal to you. And so you end up wondering, you know, why am I always getting into trouble? Like, I'm not deliberately trying to be a pain. I just, this is the way I feel, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do differently. And I don't feel good, but I don't know what to do about it. So I spent my whole childhood up into my teens kind of silently struggling with all this. And back then, mental health issues were a massive stigma. I've been gone now from the UK for 18 years, so I'm not sure if that's moved on. But definitely when I was growing up, only like really crazy people went to therapy. If you had a therapist, you never ever talked about it.
Sure.
You never admitted to being in counseling. It was very kind of underground. I got to the end of my ability to figure out what was wrong with me, but not be able to change my behavior when I think it was actually when I left home. I was 19. I was studying up in London at what is now South Bank University. I was at the National Bakery School doing my pastry chefing thing. And I'd moved out of home, so I didn't have the kind of the constraints that home can bring you. And so I finally went to see a counselor, a therapist person for the first time that was attached to the university. And that's where I started to understand that I had chronic depression. I had what I call not a situational depression. A situational depression might be caused by, you know, a loved one dying, or the ending of a relationship, or, you know, things like that. That wasn't what I was experiencing. What I was experiencing was like a chronic depression, something that I had no control over, something that wasn't caused by anything tangible. Yes. It was that there was nothing that triggered it, and there was nothing I could do to alter it.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I started therapy back then, and I'd actually went in and out of therapy various times over my life for years, trying to figure out, you know, why I couldn't change, why I couldn't make this depression go away. At various times, I got desperate enough to start taking antidepressants, various antidepressants that were prescribed to me. But for the most part, none of them gave me any relief from the depression. But all of them gave me various side effects, none of which were good.
Okay.
So I would go on antidepressants for a while. I'd get fed up with having no relief. I would get fed up with the side effects, so I'd come off them. And after, you know, years and years of doing this, I finally decided that just living with the depression was easier than trying to manage it with pharmaceutical medications. And I just got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to have to drag my way through life. This is my life. And what most of the medical profession will tell you is that, you know, depression is a chemical imbalance. You have to take drugs to fix it, mm-hmm. but that there's actually no cure for it, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And so I resigned myself to the fact that I was just going to be depressed forever. There was nothing I could do about it. And you learn to, but in England, you have to learn to hide it,
sure.
because there is such a stigma about it. Nobody wants to talk openly about it. People will judge you. It's, you know, you talk about that kind of stuff openly, you get labeled, you get shunned, it's career limiting. It's like all the things that aren't good. So I got to the point where I just started to fake it. Sure. You know, you do what you've got to do. And given that I had not been able to get any relief from it, or change it via medications or talk therapy, I just learned to drag myself through life, but sure. put on a game face.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a long time. And it was, I'll truncate the story. There was a lot more in the middle, but I'll skip to 2013. So nearly 6 years ago, I was living here in the States. And I actually had a mental break. So, you know, I was suicidal. The police came. And, you know, if you know anything sure. about America, it was kind of like TV. This was, okay. you know, six enormous cops show up. There's handcuffs. There's medical people. There's ambulances and flashing lights and all the things anyway. So they came to get me.
Sure.
Because I had been reported to the police as being suicidal by my then therapist. So that was a bit dramatic. I ended up in the hospital under armed guard because America.
Sure.
And as a result of that, and I managed to talk my way out of the hospital after 9 hours. They were preparing to commit me,
okay.
which in the state of Washington means that you are... But you are basically jailed in a mental hospital for 2 weeks and there's nothing you can do about
sure,
it.
They call it sectioned over here.
Okay, yeah. So I was about to be committed and I'm single and I got a pile of cats and, you know, yeah. life and a mortgage and all the things. And I'm like, okay, if I'm committed and I disappear for 2 weeks, one, I'm going to come back and find I have no job because nobody knew I was in the hospital. There was nobody at home that was going to miss me. My boss would have missed me if I hadn't shown up to work, but of course they didn't bring my cell phone to the hospital. So who knows any phone numbers now? We don't. We just poke a button on yeah. the phone, right? So I had no way to contact anyone. Nobody knew I was there. If I just disappeared for 2 weeks, I mean, that would have been like really life damaging.
Sure.
I probably wouldn't have had a job when I got back. You know, I would have had a pile of dead cats in the house. I mean, it was just terrible. So I managed after 9 hours to persuade them that I was actually, it would be safe for them to let me go home. So I got myself out of that situation. But part of the deal with letting me out was that I had to have a psychiatric evaluation.
Okay.
So there followed a merry-go-round of psychiatrists and doctors and I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder. For those of you who are wondering about the 2 part, there's various forms of bipolar. Bipolar 1 disorder is where you swing from manic phases to depressive phases, but the manic phase is the one that's most prevalent. So, and manic phases being... You know, when you literally, you go spend £50,000 of money that you don't have,
okay.
you sleep with everything that stands still long enough, you get drunk, you drive 110 in a 30, that's the
sure.
kind of the crazy behavior. And they have shorter, less regular periods of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Bipolar 2 disorder, which is what I had, is the opposite. So we have prolonged and intense periods of depression punctuated by shorter periods of what they call hypomania. So I don't do the crazy stuff, but my hypomania shows up looking like, for example, I literally became a mental superwoman. So I could write a cookbook in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
I just became incredibly focused. Like a superwoman, and I loved those parts. Those parts were awesome because I got a ton of stuff done, and you know I felt like I could save the world,
sure.
and so that was all awesome. But the depression, not so much. So though that's the basic difference between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2. But essentially, bipolar means you're switching from a kind of a crazy, happy, in air quotes, state to a, you know, you want to kill yourself state. So I was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder. That actually explained why none of the antidepressants that I'd had in the past had worked, because you should not give antidepressants that are designed for people with a unipolar depression. You should not give those to bipolar people because they don't work and they cause horrible side effects. So that explained that. So that was kind of handy. But there followed this kind of merry-go-round of drugs and psychiatrists. What they were trying to do was find a medication that would keep me stable and keep me alive and stop me from hurting me or someone else. Not that I'm a violent person, but you know, once bipolar can, you know, things that are beyond your control can happen. So we tried, I remember the first thing we tried, and I don't know what the drug was called, and anyway, what they call drugs in America are, have different names here, so that wouldn't really be relevant for the for the British listeners. They put me on a drug which basically turned me into a zombie, and I could barely function, so we did that for 2 weeks, and I'm like, okay, this can't work, because I'm the only one supporting me, I've got to go to work here, people. And so we tried, I think it was on about the fifth thing we tried that actually things started to feel more stable. Despite that, however, 9 months later, I became suicidal. And I was suicidal for 8 months. And when I say 8 months, I mean every waking moment of every day for 8 months, there was this voice in my head that was trying to get me to kill myself. So that wasn't a bunch of fun. I went through a few psychiatrists. We changed up the drugs. Nothing was helping. And so I got mad and went to another new doctor who asked me to try something called lamotrigine. I'm not sure what it's called in the UK, which is an anti-seizure medication. And that's important. I'll explain in a moment. So, and 3 days after putting me on lamotrigine, it was literally like somebody switched the light on in my life. And all of a sudden, I felt joy for probably one of the first times in my life. And for 6 months, it was magical. I had my joy back. I was going out and doing things I loved again. It was awesome. But then 6 months after I started taking it, I suddenly became suicidal again. Their response to that was to double the dose. So they doubled the dose. The joy came back. It was all fabulous for another 6 months. And then I became suicidal again. Their response to that was they wanted to double the dose. And that was at the point at which I called BS. And I'm assuming you all know what BS is.
We know it's something else, but...
and I said, no, I can't spend the rest of my life doubling the dose of this medication that is literally altering my brain, and I know it's altering my brain because I think differently, I feel differently, I'm doing things differently, so it's altering my brain. We can't just keep upping the dose every 6 months.
They were treating you like a drug addict, a dependent that are on these. You want more and more. Is that right?
Right. But the other thing is, you know, if you're becoming suicidal every 6 months, it might be that in the wrong situation, I might have actually killed myself.
Exactly, yeah.
And I can't go along thinking, okay, when's the shoe going to drop? Which day am I going to wake up and I'm suddenly suicidal? And if I'm not in a good place or if there's no one I can call, you know, that could have been fatal, literally.
And again, you're at home with your cats, you know, and nobody knows.
At home with my cats. Yeah. So at that point was when I just got really, really, really mad, and I fired everybody. I fired all my doctors. I fired all the psychiatrists. I just fired everybody. And I said, nobody is asking the critical question. Nobody's doing any critical thinking. Nobody was asking, why is Carrie bipolar?
Sure. It's all about the why, isn't it?
Right. It was all, they were just looking at my symptoms, giving it a label, saying, you're bipolar. And I remember when I was first diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, they gave me this book to read, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically like the Bible of how to deal with being bipolar.
Sure.
And I read it, and it was just like, there's no cure. You're just going to have to learn to live with it. You're going to have to navigate your entire life around your condition. That will alter how you can vacation. It will alter your relationships. It will alter what you can do in your career. It will change everything. And you just have to learn how to navigate around it. And I was like, no, I don't accept this. This is dumb. And I don't accept it. And why is nobody asking why I have bipolar? There's something that caused it.
Sure.
Right? Like, why am I like this? So I fired everybody and I decided that I was going to find out why I was bipolar. Because, I mean, I was thinking, is it food? I already knew that food has a massive effect on the body.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, is it some crazy food allergy that I don't even know I have? Is it environmental? Am I like allergic to some toxin that's done something in my brain? Is it genetic? Is it growing up with a manic depressive father? So is it, you know, something I've learned, like, or is it a combination of the things? Why am I bipolar? I decided to start with genetics because genetics is what it is, right? It's black and white. Your genetics are what they are.
Yeah.
You're not talking about variables like, you know, foods or toxins or learned behaviors. Your DNA is your DNA. So I decided to look at my DNA and rule out any DNA things and then move on to the other things. So I sent off two, and I'm assuming you have a company, 23andMe, if you can get that in the UK, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
But it's a company that will, you spit in a vial, send it off, and they send you back your DNA file.
I think at the moment there's loads of Facebook ads for similar sort of DNA tests that will test everything from inherent things to what you could be allergic to, things like that.
Right. So I just got, I did the very simple thing. It was literally just, I sent them spit. They sent me back my genome, which is literally like, this is what you're made of. This is your genetic profile. And it was cheap. It was like here in the States, it's like $99. So it was like 60 quid.
Sure.
And I got my DNA back and I ran it through. What you get back from these companies doesn't really tell you anything. It just tells you a lot of gobbledygook. So you run that. There's some websites that you can upload your DNA data to, and it will give you a consumer-friendly report that says, you know, this gene is mutated, this gene is mutated, so on and so forth.
Sure.
So I did that. And I discovered in that process, and I wasn't surprised because I had a friend of mine in the States who is studying to be a naturopath had said to me something about a gene called MTHFR and in a passing conversation. So I got my DNA and I specifically went and looked at that and I discovered, not surprisingly, that I do have a genetic mutation which is known as MTHFR. One of the things that means is that I have a very reduced ability to methylate. Now, methylation is a process that occurs in our bodies for all sorts of things, but one of the main things that methylation is required for is making B vitamins, specifically folate and B12, into a usable form. So for people who do not have this genetic mutation, you eat foods with B vitamins. I'm saying vitamins like an American.
Yeah.
you eat foods with B vitamins in, and your body methylates that and makes it into a form that you can use, and you all go on and you're all happy and life's good. I have a very reduced ability to do that. So basically, I had been, I'd had no B vitamins my whole life.
Wow.
I had been malnourished in the vitamin B department forever because I didn't have the ability to methylate them. So it doesn't matter how much of the stuff I eat, none of it is being converted into a form I can use. Now, why that's important, and actually I'd had a bunch of blood tests as well, which corroborated that I had a severe deficiency in all the B vitamins. Yeah. So that was corroborated. And the reason why this is so critically important is because B vitamins are essential. Their number one role is neurotransmitter health.
Sure.
So my whole life, my neurotransmitters had never had the nutrients they needed in order to function properly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one thing. There's lots of other things that the MTHFR mutation causes. One of the other things is that it means that we have a very reduced ability to detox. So at your, you know, we all have a liver, and the liver's, one of the liver's functions is to clean out the crap. And so, but my liver doesn't do a very good job of that because of this genetic mutation.
Sure.
So not only am I not getting the nutrients I need, but I'm also, you know, if I'm exposed to toxins, like, for example, mercury in old amalgam fillings,
mm-hmm.
You know, chemicals in the air, chemicals in food, chemicals in cleaning products. When I'm exposed to those things, my liver has a much, much, much harder time of getting rid of them. So actually, my body had become quite toxic.
Sure.
So add all of these things together. Oh, we also found out that genetically, I am intolerant to gluten. So the gluten, or my whole life up to that point, had been attacking my brain, which was not helping. And that was a genetic thing. And I'm not celiac, so it doesn't show up in the form of celiac, which is what most Western doctors will tell you, that if you're not celiac, then you don't have a gluten intolerance. But my DNA told a different story. So I do have a gluten intolerance, even though I don't have celiac disease. But it was affecting me in other ways. So I added all of this stuff up. And I also had a whole bunch of blood tests done, which looked at food sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, you know, what I had in my blood that I shouldn't, what I should have had in my blood and didn't, you know, all of that.
Sure.
And I, armed with the DNA and all of the blood test results, I found a naturopath. I was living in Seattle at the time. I found a naturopath and we started working on clearing all that up. At the same time as I started investigating my DNA, I bumped into a doctor on Twitter, a doctor who's getting pretty famous in the States, but I'm not sure if you've heard of him in England yet.
What's his
name is Dr. Ted Naiman.
Right.
And he's
I've heard of him, but I do a lot of research now, so
he's very prolific on Twitter.
Sure.
He's he can be a little bit some people find him offensive. He's very he doesn't hold back.
Good.
But he, and if you look to, if you look at a picture of him online, and ladies, I highly recommend that you do this, his profile picture, he's shirtless. And if you want to know why I picked him as my doctor, it's just like, would you not want your doctor to be the epitome of health and fitness?
Sure.
Right? Kind of makes sense. Anyway, so I connected with Dr. Naiman on Twitter. And he was going to start helping me with my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told him I had bipolar. And he said, I think I can help you. So we actually, we met and had coffee and we talked about my bipolar. And then I said, you know, hey, I'm not here for a free ride. Because, of course, in America, we have to pay for all of this.
Sure.
I said, I'm not here for a free ride. I'll make an appointment and I'll come and see you in your office as a patient. And so that's what we did. Well, Dr. Naiman put me on the ketogenic diet.
Ah.
And his reasoning, and this is where the anti-seizure medication I said earlier was important. the ketogenic diet was originally developed to help children with seizures. It was found to be incredibly effective at either reducing or eliminating seizures in kids. And so because I was on an anti-seizure medication, Dr. Naiman was postulating that if keto helped children with seizures and I'm on an anti-seizure medication, that it may help me as well.
Sure.
So Dr. Naiman put me on the ketogenic diet. 6 weeks later was when I took all the information to my naturopath. When we layered all of my food sensitivities, I had more food sensitivities than you can even imagine. When we layered all of my food sensitivities over a ketogenic protocol, I was left with 9 foods.
Nine.
So for 3 months, I only ate 9 things. And I also had to rotate them because in the world of food sensitivities, if you eat too much of something or too often, you can actually create a sensitivity in yourself by doing that. So I had 9 things to eat, and you're going to ask me what they are, and I don't remember all of them, but I know lamb was one, duck was one, bison was one, pork. Then I think hazelnuts, some cheese. I can't remember what the other 3 were.
Sure.
But so those were the foods I rotated for 3 months. And I also started a protocol of methylated B vitamins because it turns out you can get B vitamins that are pre-methylated because I can't do it. So I have to have ones where it's already done. So I started taking pre-methylated B vitamins. I also discovered that I had a massive E. coli infection in my gut, which we started treating, but no pharmaceuticals, no antibiotics, because antibiotics can destroy your gut.
Yeah.
So we started doing that. And there was various other bits and pieces. So I was taking supplements up the yin-yang. I was on this 9-item, very, very ketogenic diet. And so that's what I was doing. Now, to be clear, there's the keto diet and there's the keto diet.
Sure.
And it's different depending on the results you want.
Yeah.
So for me, I started the ketogenic diet for my brain, not for weight loss. So what I was trying to do was I was chasing ketones. So Dr. Naiman wanted me to get my ketones as high as possible because we were trying to heal my brain. Now, anyone who's doing keto for weight loss does not need to do that. If you're in ketosis, that's all you need. You won't lose more fat, you won't lose more weight by virtue of being deeper in ketosis. So as long as you're in ketosis, it's all good. You do not need to chase ketones. You do not need to get deep purple on your pee sticks if you do that. You do not need high ketone readings. You don't need any of that. You just need to be in ketosis.
Sure. I think the way I use ketosis is I let my body do the talking. I don't really measure the macros, but I always steer people, if you really want to do it, there are people that can help you out there, but sorry to interrupt you, Gary. Just so I know, you know how I'm sort of a what would be called a lazy keto, really, or I call it intuitive ketosis.
Right. Well, lazy in the but you know you got the results you needed,
sure.
Right? But I just there's a lot. There's so much misinformation out there, and a lot of people that are looking to use keto to lose weight think that they have to chase ketones. They think that their ketone readings have to be super high. They think that their pee sticks have to be deep purple. They're like, ketones, ketones, ketones. That's not true. You only need to do that if you're looking to heal a medical condition, mental health issue, epilepsy, those kind of things. So I was chasing ketones, but then I was trying to heal bipolar. I wasn't trying to lose weight for those of you who are listening to this who are trying to lose weight, you simply need to be in ketosis. So you don't need to do the crazy high fat. You don't need to do to take exogenous ketones, ketone, you none of that. You don't need to do that. You just need to be in ketosis. And the number one driver of ketosis is not the addition of anything. It's the absence of carbohydrates.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's what you should be focusing on. Absence of carbohydrates, not addition of fat. If you're just looking to lose weight. So I was doing what they call here in the States therapeutic keto, in that I was chasing ketones because we were trying to get my ketones so high as to like bathe my brain in ketones. So that's what I was doing. So I was on the keto, Dr. Namer's ketogenic diet for 6 weeks. Then I went to see my naturopath. We layered over the food sensitivities. We started me on the methylated B vitamins. We started killing the E. coli, but in a non-pharmaceutical way, no antibiotics. And there was a bunch of other things that needed correcting. 6 weeks after that, so 3 months after I started keto, 6 weeks after I added in the correct supplements for me, Dr. Naiman said, you can come off your lamotrigine. And I was terrified because I had a year earlier, I had unfortunately run out of lamotrigine over a weekend and I couldn't get a refill. And about 36 hours after my missed dose, I became suicidal. So when Dr. Naiman said to me, you can come off your lamotrigine, I was understandably terrified. And I said, I'm not brave enough to go cold turkey because I do live alone. Sure. And, you know, and he said, then we'll go down. So we kind of half-lifed it. We went down to half and waited to see what would happen. And then we went down half. And then and I, over the course of, I think it was about a couple of weeks, I was completely off my lamotrigine. That was almost 3.5 years ago. I have been entirely unmedicated for 3.5 years, and I have had zero symptoms of my bipolar, my ex-bipolar disorder, in the same 3.5 years. So when I say keto made me happy, I literally mean that keto made me happy.
Oh, brilliant.
Because I no longer have to deal with depression, which is something that I'd had my whole life. I no longer have, you know, spend a significant or any time with my brain trying to kill me. It has literally helped to make me happy. Now, of course, in my situation, it wasn't only the keto. I do need the methylated B vitamins.
Sure.
Because I have this genetic mutation called MTHFR. And I don't think that all symptoms of the various mental health things are caused by the same things. I don't think everyone that has bipolar necessarily has the MTHFR genetic mutation.
Sure.
So I'm not saying this is a, you know, bipolar's caused only by this, but in my case, this was what I did. Now when people say to me, I mean, I don't even have bipolar 2 on my medical records anymore, because I think it would be fair to say that after 3.5 years with zero symptoms, I don't have bipolar anymore.
That's brilliant. Absolutely. So inspiring.
And I know some people would disagree with that, and they would say, well, you do still have bipolar, but you're managing it. I'm like, 3.5 years with zero symptoms.
Exactly.
I mean, that's like saying, you know, I haven't had a plaster on my leg in 3.5 years. Is my leg still broken?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So in my mind, I no longer have bipolar. And I also, the thing I want to, and this may be, again, because I don't really understand the status of how mental health is in the UK anymore, but in my opinion, mental health issues are not things. They're symptoms of something else.
Sure.
So bipolar, for me, bipolar disorder or bipolar disease was not actually a thing. It was simply symptoms of my genetic mutation and the fact that my brain wasn't getting enough ketones.
Sure.
So it was a symptom, not a thing. And I think when you start looking at mental health issues as symptoms, not things, it changes everything.
It does. I think it's, again, inspiring, but also, I must admit, the last 5, 10 years, mental health is at the forefront of the UK government, the health, NHS, things like that. And it is accepted now as, you know, as somebody who had broken their leg or somebody who's got cancer, things like that. And thank heaven, sometimes it has a negative effect, but social media, to be able to talk about it and have a collective, a collectiveness that people say, yeah, oh, I've been depressed, I've had bipolar, you know. Myself, 2000, I was clinically depressed, but I was lucky enough to stop medication, but also to rewire my brain through things like meditation. Again, I did start eating right at that time, and then everything went haywire. But the things just keep sort of coming together. The fact that there are people out there who can help, and even just by listening to things like this, you know, so you're bound to get some sort of answer. Now, I was interested to about the bee method. Is it the
methylated bees?
Methylated bees, because I'm not sure if I heard it on one of your podcasts with that you were on or something else. But for some reason, I went onto Amazon or to the local health food store and I bought some HMB supplements. But it was just about somebody said, "Oh, this might help you towards, you know, as you know, to in, as well as you." I take multivitamins and electrolytes, and that's all really I take. I said, "Oh, HMBs." And then I've always taken turmeric just for the inflammation qualities it has. But my family were worried that I was taking so many supplements, it was like being on prescription drugs sometimes. So I've sort of narrowed it down, but I do take the HMB still.
I think one thing about supplements that I've discovered through this process, and I've always been one that supplemented, because I always felt that we could never really know, you know, you can read the values for what they think, what vitamins and minerals are in foodstuffs, but it varies so much based on, you know, an orange, for example, has, you know, however much vitamin C in it. But then if it's been stored for, you know, 4 weeks, then the vitamin C is half, and you know, so there's all these different factors in there.
Yeah.
So I despite what the data would tell you about the vitamin C that was in an orange, I was like, well, we can't really know, because I don't know how long that thing's been stored or what temperature it's been stored at, or so there's all these variables. So I used to supplement with a multivitamin, multimineral, just to cover my bases.
However,
what I've learned through this process is that if you're going to supplement, go get help.
Sure.
Don't, you know, if you have no symptoms, that you're perfectly healthy, that there's nothing going on, then I don't think that supplementing with a multivitamin and multimineral is going to harm you.
Sure.
However, if you have symptoms of anything at all, I would highly recommend that you spend a little bit of money and go and see either a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor. I don't know what they call them over there. Maybe they don't call them functional medicine doctors. I don't know. But
yeah, there are people. I think on the other job, we have got clients who do that sort of thing as well. So
go find someone who knows about this stuff and actually figure out what you need, rather than just taking a, you know, off-the-shelf multivitamin and multimineral. Because I've discovered in this process that there were things that I was actually deficient in through blood tests and also through symptoms. And a naturopath or a functional medicine doctor are actually trained to link. See, these people work on root cause, not on fixing symptoms. They do it the other way around. So that's why they're my people, because they were asking the critical questions. They were asking, okay, why does she have bipolar, and why does she have this, and why does she have psoriasis? Rather than, here's a steroid cream that will make your psoriasis look like it's gone away, but we're not actually fixing the root cause. We're not asking why you have psoriasis. We're not fixing you getting it. Yeah. We're just making it look like it's gone away.
Sure, yeah. It's reactive rather than proactive, which what you're doing.
And I am no longer interested, because of this experience I've had with bipolar, I am no longer interested in getting a Band-Aid or fixing symptoms. Mm-hmm. I am only interested in finding out root causes and stopping the root cause. That's kind of where I am with any health-related issue now.
Sure.
So I highly recommend that you spend a few quid, you go see a naturopath, you get the blood tests, you get your DNA done, and you find out what's really going on with your body, and you work on that. So they estimate that 30%, that's huge, right? 30% of the population have the MTHFR genetic mutation.
Goodness me.
So there's 30% of the people walking around who may be severely deficient in B vitamins, specifically folate and B12. Disastrous.
Yeah.
Absolutely disastrous.
Yeah.
And so it really, really worries me how many people are in jail because they need methylated B vitamins. Like, sure. How insane is that?
It's absolutely bonkers. And again, we're really fortunate to have the National Health Service over here in the UK, and they are, you know, priceless. But I'd love to get a politician, and hopefully I will do it on the show, to say, if you cure these symptoms, you can one, save us as a taxpayer a lot of money. Like you say, you'll keep people out of prison. And you'll make everything more, you know, a sustainable, happier place with people who are more healthy, who don't die of Alzheimer's or anything like that, or Parkinson's or anything that may be related to things like that you what you've been talking about. And so I'm getting on my high horse again.
No, but I mean, Rob, it needs to be said. And my experience, and the reason why I'm so vocal in now kind of talking about, and I'm sure some people think I brag about the fact that I used to have bipolar. It's not bragging, but people need to know that, you know, when I found out, when I got my DNA back and I saw that I had this genetic mutation, MTHFR, I have a bunch of others too, and I'm currently working on writing those through nutrition and supplementation. But when I found out I had MTHFR, it changed everything, because suddenly I wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
And suddenly it was like someone had said to me, you know, you have diabetes, or you have cancer, or you have a broken leg.
Yeah.
I was no longer crazy. I had something that was fixable. And all I needed was to stop eating carbohydrates, and very particularly gluten, and start taking supplements for me. That was all it took. And I'd had a lifetime of hell.
Yeah.
And I'm not being dramatic when I say I had had a lifetime of hell from depression, what they then discovered was bipolar 2 disorder, for no good reason.
Yeah.
And I am mad about that. And also, I do not want other people to suffer for one day longer than they need to. And there are millions of people suffering the world over. Not just those of us who have these symptoms, but also the loved ones of people who have these symptoms are suffering. The children are suffering. People are dying. people are committing suicide because, for in my case, I didn't have enough B12. Mm-hmm. How dumb is that?
And how simple can it be? You know,
right?
Yeah, how simple is it?
So, and I'm not saying that it will be that simple for everyone. The point of me sharing my story is that I absolutely believe that there is a way for us to each find out the root causes of our mental health issues and fix the root causes. Get off the medication, get off the suicidal thought train, get off the violence train. I swear, half of the prisons in America are filled with people who are not, who have mental health issues that are not them.
Sure.
So one reason why I really, one years ago, before I discovered all about the, before I was diagnosed with bipolar and went on this journey, I was put on various antidepressants. Some of the side effects were awful. One of them made me violent. Now, I am not a violent person at all, but one of these antidepressants made me violent. And when I say violent, I mean I was hurling coffee tables across the room. I assaulted somebody. Wow. Like, that's just not who I am.
Yeah.
And because I'm in America, of course,
yeah.
I was so lucky that the person I assaulted realized that it was the medications that had caused the behavior change, that it wasn't me, mm-hmm. and so didn't press charges. But I was this close to being incarcerated on a felony assault charge that was caused by medication. The thing that was supposed to make me happy, actually, I could so easily have ended up in prison on a felony assault charge, which would have changed my entire life for absolutely no reason.
That's amazing. What a story, folks. I know it's
so, and that's why I worry about the number of people that are currently incarcerated, because we could fix it with nutrition.
Yes.
And they're in prison for reasons not over something that they could control.
Yeah, and, you know, ironically, what they're being fed in there, wherever their prisons are,
is making it worse.
Exactly, yes.
I've reached that point in my life where I simply do not care what people think about me anymore.
I don't blame you.
Which is why I can stand up and talk about bipolar, because I don't care. If people think I'm a kook, I simply do not care. Because one person listening to this may go do their DNA, may go see a naturopath, may start eating keto and end the hell that they have been living in. And to me, I that's all worth it. I'll take any amount of haters and people thinking I'm crazy if one person's life can be healed.
You just need to touch that one person. That one person. And I'm going to digress a bit for a few questions because I believe you're a cult leader now, Carrie.
Oh, that's funny. So before everyone gets really weirded out, I was recently on social media. Somebody posted that that yes, I have cult followers, and so apparently my Facebook group where we talk about what food to eat on keto and I share keto recipes that I've developed, and we're generally there to kind of virtually hug and support people and help them on their journey, is apparently a cult. Yeah. So
I must admit, when I talk to people about the ketogenic way of eating and things like that, I call it a movement now, because it is a little bit of a, you know, I get very evangelical about it and so excited, because when people say, oh, Minette, Rob, you've lost some weight, how'd you do it? And then I start and I thought, I've got to hold back sometimes, because people do think, right, yeah, maybe, you know, and I think the long robe and the chains around my neck gives it away a little bit.
If being nice to people, if being nice to strangers and encouraging them to eat real whole food makes me a cult, I'm all for it. Yeah, I'm like, call me whatever you like. I simply don't care.
I'm with you. And as I say, this program is mainly about mental health. But do you mind, Carrie, if I ask you a few more general questions about keto?
Sure.
Yeah.
Ask me anything you like.
Fantastic. Now, your cookbooks are very famous. And again, you can download them from your website. Is that correct?
So they are... I did them in two formats. They're available in physical because people still like books, and people particularly seem to like cookbooks because they write on them and they just like a physical book. I'm one of those people. I like a physical book.
Yeah.
But they are available through Amazon.
Yep.
Amazon was the publisher. So they are available through Amazon. They are available on amazon.co.uk, but they are a lot more expensive than the digital versions, which is why I made the digital versions.
Sure.
They're a lot cheaper. They're what, $9 US, so about £6.
£6-7, yeah.
And so if you go to carriebrown.com, they are downloadable. They're digital PDFs so that you can read them on any device you like. So if you don't need a physical cookbook, I would highly recommend that you just get the digital. I wanted them to be accessible to as many people as possible, which is sure. why they're so much cheaper in digital format.
Brilliant.
So,
and most people now have got either a phone with a big screen or a tablet, an iPad, whatever, which has got various apps so you can read things like that.
And to be clear, I didn't start writing cookbooks to build a business or make money. I started writing cookbooks. In fact, everything I do is because I want to help people.
Yeah.
I want to stop people from suffering.
Yeah.
However, the reality is that this does cost me money. You know, they
sure.
do cost me money to produce, which
yeah.
is why I can't give everything away for free.
Exactly.
But for those of you who really have spent a boatload of money or have issues that mean that you can't work, there are a bunch of free recipes on carriebrown.com too. So it's not all about money's recipes that cost money. There's a bunch of free resources there. There's also, I do lives on Facebook regularly. I do lives with Dr. Ken Berry and various other people. I have the podcast that I do with Carl Franklin, Two Keto Dudes. All of that is free because we genuinely, we just want to help people. So there's a ton of free resources
yeah.
available that we put out. If you have budget for cookbooks, they will help you. But if you don't, you know, there's plenty of free resources
yeah.
up on carriebrown.com. And also we have our cult Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/theketokitchen, where you will get a mountain of free recipes, free support, free love and hugs and all of that
Brilliant.
Good stuff.
I'll pop a link.
And a lot of fun.
When we publish this podcast, Carrie, I'll put all the links and everything like that. Because on... I think Monday that you recorded Two Keto with the keto trucker, is that right?
Yogi
yeah.
Parker, he's awesome.
Well, I haven't listened to it yet, but a friend of ours is ironically not the actor, but he was on our first edition, Jack Black, who's sort of my business mindfulness type of coach that I've been to. He's sort of our version of Tony Robbins over here, and he'll like that. But he, with him being a Scotsman and introduced me to keto, he's always had a sweet tooth, and he was just asking that is any chance, Carrie, that we could have a chocolate mint chip, raspberry ripple and stracciatella recipe very soon on one of your...
Well, the chocolate mint chip is already... one of my cookbooks is called The Keto Ice Cream Scoop, and it is filled with, 55 keto ice cream recipes, and then there's, like, a bunch of mix-ins, like, you know, fudge brownie pieces and whatnot to go in those. So there's... Chocolate mint chip is already done. Raspberry ripple... Did I do a raspberry ripple? I don't know. I can't remember. There's a raspberry ice cream... but I'm always working on more ice cream recipes. Keto ice cream is like, if I had a favorite thing, if I could only ever work on one type of recipe ever again, it will be ice cream. Uh-huh. I'm fascinated by the science of ice cream and how it works.
I think that's going to be on one of my wish lists on Amazon, to get an ice cream maker, I think, because I love ice cream. And I was over in New England in the summer. We had 3 weeks over in a place called Chester in Massachusetts. And we discovered Friendly's do a sugar-free ice cream, which was quite good because you could just pour peanut butter on it, which the kids loved it because they had what they had it. But
do you realise how close you were to me and you didn't know it?
I didn't know. No.
So I moved to Connecticut last year. In March last year, I moved. I'd been in Seattle for 17 years and I packed up the house and the cats and moved over. So I'm now living in Connecticut. And I actually live very close to Chester, Connecticut. So next time you come, you have to come hang, and I'll make you as much keto ice cream as you want.
Definitely. And my challenge, end of February, March, we're off to the States again, but we're going to Florida and doing the theme parks. So my challenge is, I'll probably take a little mini recorder so I can interview people, things like that, is to discover ways of eating low carb, high fat in the theme parks all round and about and various
It's not hard.
Oh, right,
okay. I know lots of people who have done the theme parks and survived admirably. So but that will be great for you to share with your listeners of how that worked. But yeah, if you ever come over to the northeast corner, if you're ever in New England, then we need to hang out.
I need to come to Keto Fest.
You do need to come to Keto Fest. It's the third weekend in July. It's about half an hour away from me. And now, because I'm the new dudette, along with the two keto dudes, Carl Franklin and Richard Morris, that it's now kind of my event. So.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. And we have to get one in the UK. That's another thing I could, on my many list, is having some sort of get-together or start a small meetup that could evolve into inviting people like yourselves, or you know, hopefully getting the UK doctors, GPs, to sort of endorse the keto. There's a lot of people who are. In fact, I haven't actually been to my doctor for years, but I did. I was in a pub, and he was there having his lunch, and he just looked over the bar for me and just smiled as a plumminette, Rob. Yeah, and just that little nod. So yeah, he's doing something right.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, no, it definitely is a movement.
Yeah.
If haters want to call it a cult, I'm down with that.
Yeah. I'm making the t-shirts. Don't worry, it's already done.
Because as I say, if being kind to strangers and encouraging people to eat real whole food is a cult, then
yeah,
bring it on. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, it's that time that we have to wind up the show, but thanks again ever so much to Carrie Brown. All the links will be included on the podcast notes. And I'm in the middle of actually branding up the keto happiness ethos and things like that, the tone of voice and everything that we do in my other job. But also, I have created a Facebook page. It's not yet up and running properly, but it will be Keto Happiness. And anything, I'll be promoting other people, sharing the love, sharing the knowledge from everyone I read, I listen to, things like that. And feel free to contribute. But again, once again, thank you ever so much for being on my second show now, Carrie. And we will see you very, very, very soon.
It's been a pleasure, Rob. I'm really excited that a bunch of British people are going to hear, and I want feedback on is how American do I sound?
You don't sound very American, you know. Then again, I don't sound Welsh, but I live very close to sort of the Chester border. In fact, it's Chester, UK. I live very close to, and Liverpool. So I've got a little bit of a Scouse twang to my voice, people say. So
yeah, you definitely do. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't have said Welsh. I would have said Northern. But then again, I've been away a while, so I'm confused now.
What I can say, I can speak a little bit like Tom Jones sometimes. You know? And I'd like to say, Diolch yn fawr, Carrie Brown, which is thank you you very much, Carrie Brown. And stay tuned to the next Keto Happiness podcast. Bye for now.